Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Science, The Endless Frontier is a Landmark 1945 Policy Report by Vannevar Bush, published as a book in later editions. Written for the U.S. government at the end of World War II, it explains why basic scientific research should be supported by public funds and how that investment could strengthen national security, industry, medicine, and long-term prosperity. The work is not a memoir or a technical monograph, but a strategic argument about the relationship between science and the state. Its central purpose is to show that new knowledge is the foundation of practical progress, and that a stable federal role is needed to sustain that knowledge over time. Because of its influence on post-war science policy and the eventual creation of the National Science Foundation, the book remains one of the most important documents in the history of American research funding. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the case for basic research as the source of future innovation. Bush argues that applied progress depends on a continuous supply of new fundamental knowledge. The book's most important idea is that basic research cannot be justified only by immediate commercial returns, because its value often appears later in medicine, engineering, communications, and defense. This is a policy argument as much as a scientific one. If government waits for the market to fund only short-term work, the country will eventually run short of the discoveries that create new industries. Bush presents basic science as the upstream stage of innovation, where uncertain inquiry generates the possibilities that later become useful technologies. That logic helps explain why the book has lasted so long. It does not merely recommend more spending on science. It frames research as a national system in which curiosity, discovery, and application are connected. This makes the report different from a standard advocacy text, because it ties public investment to a long horizon of institutional and economic development, rather than to a single wartime emergency. Secondly, a blueprint for federal support through universities and independent labs, the report does not simply ask for more money. It proposes a structure for how research should be organized. Bush recommends that federal support flow through universities and other research institutions, where scientists can pursue long-range work with relative independence. This model matters because it balances public purpose with intellectual freedom. Universities provide training, continuity, and a steady pipeline of new researchers, while independent laboratories can handle specialized projects and expand scientific capacity beyond what government agencies can directly manage. The book therefore treats research funding as an ecosystem rather than a series of isolated grants. Bush's approach also helped define the modern American research university as a central site of national innovation. By connecting federal funding to graduate education and laboratory development, he showed how research support could also cultivate human capital. The result is a policy framework that is still recognizable today in the relationship among government agencies, academic science, and technological development. The book stands out because it explains not only why science should be funded, but where and through what kinds of institutions that funding should operate. Thirdly, science policy as a national security and economic strategy, Bush wrote in the shadow of World War II, and the report treats science as a strategic asset, not just a cultural good. He argues that a nation unable to generate its own new knowledge becomes dependent on others and loses strength in both defense and commerce. That idea connects military readiness, industrial growth, and scientific leadership into one argument. The book is careful not to reduce research to weapons development, but it does insist that technological superiority rests on a broader research base. This is one of the report's key contributions. It presents public science policy as a way to maintain national resilience in peacetime as well as wartime. The practical implication is that science funding should be judged by its contribution to the country's long-term capacity, including its ability to respond to disease, competition, and geopolitical change. The report thereby links abstract inquiry to concrete national needs without collapsing one into the other. That balance is part of why the book remains historically significant. It helped define the expectation that federal science policy should serve both public welfare and strategic advantage. Fourthly, the post-war transition from wartime research to civilian benefit. Another major theme of the report is conversion technologies developed under wartime urgency should not remain locked inside military systems. Bush urges that peacetime science policy find ways to redirect wartime gains towards civilian life, including industry, health, and productivity. This is important because it shows that the book is not only about funding discovery, but about managing the handoff from emergency research to broad social use. The report implies that public investment is most effective when knowledge circulates outward rather than staying confined to defense agencies. In that sense, science, The Endless Frontier is an argument for translation, not simply invention. It recognizes that scientific work has its deepest effect when institutions make it accessible to manufacturers, hospitals, universities, and the public. That view helped shape later expectations that government-sponsored research should produce wide social returns. The book is especially notable for placing this issue at the center of policy design, rather than treating it as an afterthought. It anticipates many later debates about how to move discoveries from lab to market, while preserving scientific openness and public value. Lastly, the report's lasting legacy in the creation of modern U. Science institutions, science the endless frontier is not just historically important because it was well argued. It mattered because it helped shape institutions that still define American research. Its influence is most closely associated with the later creation of the National Science Foundation and with the broader post-war federal commitment to science funding. The report became a reference point for the idea that government should not merely sponsor isolated projects, but should sustain an enduring research enterprise. That institutional legacy is one of the main reasons the book continues to be read. It is a primary source for understanding how the United States came to treat scientific research as a public responsibility. Readers interested in policy history will find that it explains the origins of a model that still governs grant funding, university research, and the social role of scientists. Its lasting value lies in the clarity of the original framework: science as a national resource, basic research as the seedbed of future utility, and public support as the mechanism that keeps the system alive. Few works in science policy have had such direct and durable consequences. In conclusion, The Endless Frontier should be read by anyone interested in science policy, the history of American research institutions, higher education, or the relationship between government and innovation. It is especially useful for policymakers, graduate students, historians of technology, and readers trying to understand why basic research became a public responsibility in the United States. The practical benefit of the book is that it explains the logic behind modern research funding with unusual clarity. The intellectual benefit is that it shows how a single policy report helped establish a durable framework for linking discovery, education, industry, and national security. Compared with later books on science funding or innovation strategy, this work stands out because it is foundational rather than retrospective. It is not interpreting an established system from afar. It is one of the documents that helped create that system. That gives it a rare historical authority. Even today, it remains valuable because its central questions are still current. How much should society invest in knowledge? Who should support it? And how should the results of research be shared with the public? If you would like to support Vannevar Bush, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.